Right now, it is time for This Week in the Lakeville Journal, when we're joined by Cynthia Hosmider and Janet Manco. And let's see if the magic worked this morning. Good morning, Cynthia.
Good morning.
Good morning, Janet.
Hi there.
How are you guys?
Happy April Fool's Day. It's snowing.
You know, it's one of those things. I said when I first came on the air this morning, there's no April Fool's jokes, folks. We've just been through too much in the past year.
It's hard to think. You know, yeah.
And February was a winter in itself. And so I said there's no April Fool's jokes on me this
yeah.
year.
Overall, though, it's even I feel like it's been a pretty mild spring so far, and I feel hopeful.
Yeah, no, absolutely. There's definitely a feeling of now that baseball.
We're 9 days into it, kids.
Baseball officially starts today, yes. And so it's, you know.
That's not an April Fool, but I mean, yeah. Cynthia, that's good news. Get back to me in 2 weeks.
All right. We will go right to the Lakeville Journal, and I received calls last week about this, and not one or two, but many, and a couple of text messages, and I called Mark Herko and spoke to him right away about the Sharon Hospital ICU, the intensive care unit. If you've been following the Sharon Hospital and you follow the news, whether it's in the paper or wherever, you know that this the ICU has been in conversations for quite a while. And finally, you guys, it's great you have a story that puts in print exactly what's going on and what's going to happen.
And as always, kudos to Dr. Herko, who's been a very open head of Sharon Hospital, and that's been a nice change. Not that the last weren't, but it's just nice to be able to call up and immediately get a very clear answer and not have to go through channels. And so we had received an anonymous letter from somebody within the building. And I would say, in general, anonymous letters are not our favorite way to get information and are often there's often a reason why it's anonymous. But we felt it was worth calling Dr. Herko, and he said to us what I'm sure he said to you, which is, we've been talking about this for years. The ICU badly needs to be updated. I think that everybody knows that Nuvance's general sense is, when possible, they'd rather have care spread out to some of the larger hospitals. No decision's been made. This does not mean that they're going to get rid of the ICU. It may mean that it's going to change or adapt in some way. They're certainly very big on telehealth. And the sense I got from what he said to our reporter, Deborah Alexinus, is, you know, it's possible that there will be more of a telehealth element to it. There already is telehealth element where they're calling their best specialists in whatever your situation is and having them check in on you by Zoom call, which is how we essentially, which is how we all conduct so much of our lives. So it's something is going on, but it's not, a decision has not been made.
He basically, the bottom line to me, said that if you are in need of long-term ICU care, you will be put to a facility, to one of their facilities, which can handle it. I mean, they've got a problem. They have to update their, if they want to keep their ICU fully, they have to update it, and it's about a $5 million cost. And you just don't pick $5 million out of the air.
Right, and we hope that we don't have so many ICU cases that it just pays for itself. But also, it's hard, we understand, for families, especially for, you know, elderly folks, to get to a more distant hospital. It's hard enough to get to Sharon Hospital. So that is a problem, but maybe there's a way that we can, you know, there are services around that are available to help drive people. It would be so great if we could have Uber up here. The only community in the world is like, oh, please, if only we had Uber.
I think there's three
how
Uber.
Wonderful.
I think there's three Uber drivers, but I don't think they're really busy up
here. Yeah, if they need to advertise more. There's a lot of older people who could really, you know, just for driving to vaccines. But
or
I guess
or somebody could create it.
Yeah, there are options for people.
Yeah. And people actually need to know what they are.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
But it's not a great time, of course. Nobody really wants a lot of strangers in the car at this time, but soon.
All right. So now we also found out from the Region 1 Board of Education and the superintendent that Hoosie is expected to, once again, April 19th, to reopen fully, but with the caveat that if parents and students don't feel comfortable, they can still do remote learning.
The numbers are still going up, and there is some concern about rushing back into a more open part of the world, but I think that they want to really give students the opportunity to be together and to be in a classroom and be able to see teachers face-to-face. It's so funny to me, like, for my entire life, since school was invented, kids have always said, like, oh, I hate going to school, but I think that now maybe we'll see a slightly different attitude on it. Certainly parents are eager for kids to go back to school. So So we'll see how this this goes. We asked Dr. Ian Strever, the principal, to take a photo in the hallway for us. And I kind of thought there'd be tumbleweeds rolling down the hallway, but, you know, there are students there. There's just not the normal crush of young people moving between classes.
Yeah, it's well, you know, sooner or later the jump has to be made to try to work our way back towards whatever the hell normalcy is. Right. So I think the way the schools Region 1 has handled it so far this year has been magnificent, and I think this is just another step. And if for some reasons something happens, they will reevaluate. But I think it's a necessary step. I think it's a good step.
And again, kudos to Lisa Carter, the superintendent, and Ian Strever for being very, very open.
Okay. Let's go on to the vaccines. You know, we get good news, bad news. It's made one step forward, two steps back. Soon there'll be more than enough vaccine. And then we hear that the Baltimore plant, which distributes part of the vaccine, had 15 million doses that weren't done the right way.
Oh,
I mean,
gosh.
You know, it's one of those things that the vaccinations really do make you feel and make the public feel better at all, and businesses. So hopefully this can continue around here.
And a shout out to Becton Dickinson in North Canyon, which has been producing many of the syringes that are being used. But my daughter, who's 27, is on the phone right now waiting to get her appointment because, of course, today, April Fool's Day, but not. Today is the day that appointments open up to people 16 and over. So that's a very large bubble of human beings, but generally there is more and more of the vaccine. I was lucky I got the Johnson & Johnson. I thought that's what everybody would be getting from the point I got mine, but I guess that was just a fluke. I happened to be calling on the one day. Dr. Lamont says from Charlotte Hungerford, the best vaccine is the one you can get.
Actually, what happens is whatever vaccines arrive at whatever sites, that's what you get.
Yeah.
All right. This story has got legs, and unfortunately it's going to have legs for quite a while, and that is the Holly Place Project.
The Holly Place Project and the Falls Village Affordable, stirring up really a lot of emotion and a lot of anxiety from people. And, you know, this is a democracy, and everybody's airing their opinions in a very expressive and complete way. But the Northwest Hills COG last night had a really good meeting on Facebook, or not on Facebook, on Zoom, which I didn't attend, but Leela and Patrick both attended. And then Jocelyn Ayer shared with us the statistics. And there's a really good story from Cornwall, which is just starting its Affordable Housing Planning Committee. And Janelle Mullen, who's doing a lot of the affordable housing for the regional planning groups, gave great statistics on what's available in Cornwall and who lives there. So we'd asked Janelle and Jocelyn for those statistics, which we will try to get into the paper next week. But really, apparently a very good presentation, and certainly we all need to be thinking realistically about different ways that we can get affordable housing into our towns. It's a state mandate, but it's also, you know, a human mandate.
Yeah. Hey, listen, we've got 300 students at Housatonic Valley Regional High School. We don't bring more affordable housing into all the towns in this region. There comes a point in time where it's almost monetarily impossible to operate a high school with 200 students. People have to understand families need a place to live if you want to have students in the high school. That's just with the tip of the iceberg. That's not all the other problems that go with it,
right?
Like all emergency services and things like that.
Like all our businesses.
Yeah, it's just
society. Let's face it.
Yeah, it's a domino effect. Now, I like this story. We used to go looking for salamanders when I was a kid.
Great spot for it over there.
Yeah, but my people say I'm still a kid, but we used to have fun going out looking for salamanders.
A beautiful photo from Bethany Schaefer, who's the volunteer coordinator and also the naturalist at Sharon Audubon, relative newcomer to the area, but we've been in touch with her a lot, and she called and said Jonathan Doster, who actually lives on the property at Audubon and is a great photographer. They went out in search of salamanders, and actually Bethany's photo was fantastic, and Jonathan has a photo of a wood frog on the back. So Bethany talked about what the sounds are that you're hearing right now, which is the peepers. As soon as it's kind of warm and wet, you'll hear the spring peepers, which is my favorite sound. It indicates that spring is coming. Doesn't mean that there won't be frost or snow. But the peepers are out there, and that's their mating call, and then the wood frogs have a deeper, more croaky kind of a sound. And then the beautiful little salamanders are crossing often our roads to get to different vernal pools. And Bethany explains in the article what a vernal pool is. And as always, we ask at this time of year for people to be very conscious when they're driving, especially on back roads, especially in wet areas. Keep an eye out for these tiny little creatures that are slowly crossing the road. You can try to pick them up and help them across the road, but don't do it with your hands because you could squish them. But also, anything that's slightly toxic on your hands will be absorbed right into their bodies and can make them really sick or kill them.
And how soon did I... This is good information because I know we've got a lot of new people up here as well. And then when do the turtles start?
Somebody said to me that they saw a huge turtle last week, somebody in Norfolk. So I don't know the answer to that. Michael Clemens, of course, knows the answer to that. Tim Abbott, who wrote so beautifully for us for so many years about what naturalists called the big night as the amphibians start to travel.
Right, as they start. So it's an indirect way of saying be conscious of what's on the road. You
right.
would be very surprised how many living things there are.
I want to go back go on.
Well, and quickly, since Jill pointed out, there are a lot of new people here. And last year we had a lot of people, even who have been here for a long time, but who are here more intensively because of COVID, who are going out into the wild. And just a reminder that you shouldn't tinker around with a lot of stuff. It's not a theme park and it's not a museum. These are animals and plants, and you have to be very careful with them. You don't really know. Like, if you just pick up a turtle because you think it needs help crossing the road, it could be a snapper, and you could be in big trouble with your fingers. So don't go out without, don't go on the basis of a YouTube video, which is how a lot of people got sick last year from eating plants without ramps. And the ramp season, of course, is coming up.
All right, let's go to the town hall that Representative Hayes had some pushback.
She gets a hard time, and I have to say, I think she's so wonderful and so articulate and just so beautiful and so smart and is doing so much. I think she's great, and it's interesting to me that every time she does one of these live interfaces with the community that she gets a hard time. But I guess that's democracy, and I guess the good thing is people feel comfortable reaching out to her and saying, I'm concerned about this or I don't like it. And certainly it wasn't, you know, one of these very ugly commentaries that she had earlier last year. But we hope that she continues to convene with us and to let us know what's going on, as did Maria Horn, who did the wonderful talk on the COVID vaccines that were on our A1 story.
All right, Hotchkiss Library and Sharon, it looks like their ADA expansion is going to happen this year.
And as you and Jill and I and Janet know, of course, this has been going on for a decade, maybe more, and a little tiny library, and it's so interesting, Mariah Hotchkiss had given that library to the town. It's a beautiful, beautiful library, but on a really postage stamp piece of property, and it's interesting that as it was being built, that more land was not saved around it, and you forget that, like, downtown Sharon at that point was very busy and had all sorts of businesses and schools. It had a casino. So there, it's not like it was a giant, you know, sheep meadow there, and they just chose to put it on a tiny lot. At that time, there was just tiny lots. But they've had a very hard time expanding it, which they need to do, not only because it's tiny, but also because the library should be available to everybody, including people. There was somebody in town for many years in a wheelchair who really couldn't access that property. So they're moving forward. They've had two of their three approvals. They're hoping that they'll get planning and zoning approval for what looks like a fairly lovely addition on the back, small but useful. And if they can get that planning and zoning approval, they will move forward in summer and break ground.
All right. Salisbury is going to stay remote for their budget hearing and meeting, which is coming up fairly quickly.
And what people are concerned about in all of our towns is they hear this and they think, well, we're going to be left out and they're going to do stuff in back rooms and we're not going to know about it. And this is never the case in Northwest Corner towns. They bend over backward to try and have people involved, and people often don't show up. COVID's been great in the sense that a lot more people attend a Zoom meeting than attend in person. So these meetings are open on Zoom. They will be discussed. Patrick's got the schedule there. With all of your towns, if you're not sure, go to your town website, and they have the listing of the meetings. I would say North Canaan's the only town that doesn't do a great job of updating their website, but most towns are pretty good about it.
In North Canaan, if you want to know what's good, you have to go and dig down the rabbit hole. Once you get to where they post the agendas and the minutes, mm-hmm. you can find it. But it is a rabbit hole. You have to go down to find it. Nice story about a GoFundMe campaign to raise $25,000 for the music seller.
Right, John Grosowskis has done a fantastic job as Johnny G, teaching music. He's like a Pied Piper of music around here, teaching all different instruments, does drumming, and had been over in the downstairs space underneath what used to be Thriftique, and has been over now in the kind of raspberry-colored building near the rail trail. And what a great Bay City Music right on the rail trail. And because the market was so superheated for real estate in the past year because of COVID, the building is now for sale, and he's trying to raise money on a GoFundMe and had an initial strong outpouring, but has to raise quite a bit of money just to make the down payment. So it's a really great facility, and if you love music and the arts, I think that parents always are concerned that there's not enough arts education for their children, then this is a very worthwhile project to invest in.
And we've got Cornwall taking a look at their housing options. And, hey, the Sharon Town Hall is going to have a soft opening today.
Yes, it's very exciting. And we'll hope that it's not premature and that people will continue to be responsible and wear their masks. But, you know, there's a lot of there's a lot of interesting stuff that happens in Town Hall. It's nice to be able to enter again.
And a nice picture of Lakeville Lake. The ice is out.
The ice is out. It was very briefly in, and it went out very quickly. So it's been a very warm spring so far. Don Mayland is the official white ice watcher on that lake, which is the deepest natural lake in the state of Connecticut. When the ice is out there, that means it's pretty warm out.
All right. We've only got about 6 minutes left. I want to go right now to the opinion pages and your editorial, Janet, gratitude for this anniversary.
Right. And the anniversary is for the Affordable Care Act, which has been in force now for 11 years, despite many, many, many attempts to take it down and through the courts, and they are still going through the courts. But it has just been a great benefit to many on all sides of the political aisle who did not have other access to health care coverage and who do through this act. And we talk about the reasons why it would be good for them to expand the act, improve it in certain ways, but keep it in force. And just gratitude that it's still there for people because many people need it.
And once again, letters, letters, letters.
Once again, lots and lots of letters and all different topics. A really funny one from Molly Fitzmorris and Sharon. Do read that one. She talks about how her children are teaching her things, and that can happen for all of us. And Margaret Monaco on the Salisbury Housing Project and why it shouldn't have a new location. Lots on housing. Michael Kaler writing about vaccines. And we have also a couple of interesting columns, one from Lonnie Carter on South Pacific and one from Matt Gordon on Americans insisting on too much lawn around their houses.
You know, it's funny that I looked at that article, and years ago when I lived in Hillsdale, I had a backyard, and it was all overgrown. And I started with a tractor. But within 2 years, I had it all cut down, and a neighbor finally came over to me and said, you know, it's going to grow back. He said, I don't ever see you out there recreating in that backyard.
He was
right. I said, well, my theory was you keep the wildlife back as far as you can and you won't get critters around your house. But no, it really is an interesting column and one people should look at.
It's true. Matt Gordon has a lot of information in there and makes the point that really Canada and the United States are the two countries that are so into having that well-trimmed lawn around their home.
Now, have you noticed, Janet, that letters this year, it looks like political letters are not just going to stay in the political season. I've noticed that slowly and looking at the paper where, yeah, there's always a but there's more and more where on a regular basis, politics is a number one thing for people to write letters. So it looks like we're not going to get any break from that. It used to be just around election time, but now, really, I think it's going to go on 12 months a year.
That's what's been happening, and it's interesting to think about all the reasons why. Of course, we're in a very politicized and polarized time, but COVID has made things different. It is harder to connect with people, and maybe people are feeling more of a direct connection with their neighbors if they have their feelings and opinions in print rather than just throwing them up online. Whatever the reasons, it's certainly happening.
Well, I think you see the difference between social media and letters to the editor. The difference is people identify themselves, and you're just not allowed to think that you're a newspaper reporter and write whatever you want to write. That's what makes letters to the editors so great, especially in local papers.
Yeah, I agree. It's you know, it's definitely something that is well thought out and you know, talked about. I talk with every letter writer basically before we go to press. Most are, you know, ready to go, but some are not, and some just have to think a little bit more about it and enjoy that discussion. And I do too. It's a good process, and we're glad to have everybody's thoughts.
All right, Lee, you have a couple of minutes left, and Compass.
So we're feeling like there's a lot more young families with children, or we're hoping there are. Certainly because of COVID, more people have moved up here full-time. And so we're trying to do some craft stories for children, well, for families, really. And with spring vacation coming up, a lot of kids are going to be indoors and bored. We'll hope the weather is gorgeous, but it's often very muddy. And we're trying to do crafts that the children can do of all different ages, that they'll at whatever age they're at, they can find a component that's fun for them. So this one is about making little bundles and hiding them, which is a great alternative to plastic Easter eggs. As we come up on Easter Sunday, but also just a really fun like a pirate treasure hunt game. Next week we're going to have a recipe for make your own pizza that's very easy and, again, can be done. You know, different children can participate at different stages. And our hope is that the parents will let their children express their creativity. But also coming up on April 14th, I'll be doing a talk, a Zoom interview with Meg Muckenhaupt, who did a wonderful, interesting book called The Truth About Baked Beans. And it's a time when we're really talking about the cultural origins of different foods. Her thing is, everybody says, you know, for old New England, it's always the classic Boston foods. It's lobster, and it's baked beans, and it's brown bread. And she said, it's so much richer. New England cuisine is so much more diverse. I made the pupusas, which are a favorite here in the fall festival, from some of our Latino immigrants who live in the area. And we'll be demonstrating, I think, a cocktail and a couple of recipes on the Zoom talk April 14th. Judd Pearl is going to be talking about his new book on Alexander Calder, which, of course, reminds us of Tim Prentice. There's a show of work of Tim Prentice at the Aldrich Museum in Ridgefield, one of the great treasures of our area, Tim Prentice. And then Ed Furman, who's been watching a lot of television and streaming and writes really funny, interesting columns. And I found that if you watch what he's recommending, you will be rewarded. Wonderful, interesting work. And just quickly to go back to the sports page, Hunter Lyle, one of our young reporters who loves sports, wrote about the men's March Madness. I'm going to see if I can get him to write about the women's March Madness this coming week because, of course, the UConn women have been doing a spectacular job.
All right. All that and more, the pages of the Lakeville Journal, tricornernews.com on the web. You can get pick up your copies at newsstands or even have it directly mailed to you. Guys, we'll speak to you again next week.
Thank you so much.
Take care. That is This Week in the Lakeville Journal. Once again, you will find them at tricornernews.com.